All right, cool. All right. So last time we started reading the Col de Lido Fake, we introduced it and made it through the first paragraph and then had some discussions about it and looking at the psukim. And really the idea is to take it slow. You could read Col de Lido Fake in an afternoon. It's not super long, it's not super short, but the idea is to really go through it and analyze it and be able to understand it. So today I wanted to take a look at the first footnote. So the Rav is very interesting. He's one of the few authors who have famous footnotes. Like in the Halachic Man, there's the famous fourth footnote. The Rav's footnotes are not meant to be sort of like skipped over. There's often a tremendous amount there. So we'll take a look at the footnote. And what I'd like to do is to look at two of the sources that the Rav references there, because they're really fundamental in understanding what the Rav is doing. In Kol de Lido Fake. Because on one hand, Kol de Lido Fake is a reflection on the Holocaust and the Hakamat HaMedina, the establishment of Israel. And there's reflection on that, but there's also this idea of sevel, of suffering and trying to understand that as framing the discussion. But there's also a philosophical mood or mode that he's taking in Kol de Lido Fake. And in many ways, Kol de Lido Fake is kind of the begin, at least in writing, one of the first things that we have from the Rav, where he shifts into what you would call more existential thought. And we'll talk about that, what that means. Some people have more familiarity with that, some people less, but we'll talk about that. One really good resource is so his name is I don't know, it's probably going to disappear. So it's called Dov. Let me put it by my face. Dov Schwartz. So this I think has been translated into English, but there's four volumes so far, and what he does is that he goes through the Rav's works, the Rav's writings, and really analyzes them very, very closely, but also tries to uncover the sources. So he's really very helpful and in really trying to understand like what's beneath the surface in what the Rav is doing. So let's take a look at the first footnote. I'm going to share my screen. There we go. Okay. All right. So first, we'll read the first footnote. I'll read the part that it's on in Kol de Lido Fake, and then we'll just to remember, and I'll read it. This is Lawrence Kaplan's translation, and it says the title of the section is "The Righteous Who Suffers," and he said one of the darkest enigmas with which Judaism has struggled from the very dawn of its existence is the problem of suffering in the world. Already Moses, the master of prophets, in a moment of mercy and grace, of divine acceptance, pleaded with the Lord that he enlighten him concerning this obscure matter. Moses knocked at the gates of heaven and cried out, "Show me now thy ways that I may know thee, to the end that I may find grace in thy sight. Show me, I pray thee, thy glory. Why and wherefore do afflictions and pain befall men? Why and wherefore do the righteous suffer and the wicked prosper?" Okay, so taking a look at the first footnote. Okay, so he says, "See, Berachot 7a." So it's in the Gemara Berachot, Zayin Amud Aleph. It says, according to Rebbe Meir, Moses did not receive a reply to his request to comprehend the problem of suffering in the world. The righteous man who who is in adversity and the wicked man who prospers. So Rabbi Yochanan, in the name of Rabbi Yossi, disagrees. Maimonides, in the Guide of the Perplexed, adopts the view of Rabbi Yochanan, in the name of Rabbi Yossi, and asserts that God enlightened Moses regarding the governance of the totality of existence. See Guide 154, and he quotes him, "This dictum, all my goodness, alludes to the display to him, Moses, of all existing things. That is, he has grasped the existence of all my world with a true and firmly established understanding." Okay. So the first thing I'll just point out is that he's connecting what the Rambam says in the Mor Nebuchim to this Gemara in Berachot. Okay. So, sorry, hold on one second. Okay, sorry about that. Okay, so the Rav is connecting the Rambam and the Mora to this machloka, to this argument in the Gemara in Brachot. So what I'd like to do is take a look at that Gemara in Brachot and take a look at the Rambam in the Mora. Before that, we'll just quickly look at the psukim again. But before that, any questions before I zoom ahead? Okay. All right. So just to review the psukim. Okay. All right. So I'll just go about like three psukim before. So where what we need to focus on really starts. So just to review, and of course this is this week's Parsha, so it's you know, very, very nice to be focusing on it. So we know that Moshe, there was sort of a series of petitions that he made to Hashem. And each time it seemed like he got a little bit further, but it doesn't seem that he was able to, you know, he wasn't able to get all the way until he sort of shifts the modes where he says, "Hodi eini na derechecha." So the question is, what sort of happened? So, of course, you know, even on the mountain before he descended, you know, he petitioned God not to destroy the people, and it seems that God agreed to that. But then Hashem says, you know, basically, "Lech alei mizeh tava am asher elita meretz Mitzrayim el aretz asher nishpati l'Avraham l'Yitzchak l'Yaakov l'emor l'zarecha etzenana v'shalachti l'fanecha malach." He says, "I'll send an angel before you. V'geirash tiyat ha'kanani ha'emari v'achiti v'aprizi v'achivit." It seems like this angel will go before them, and they'll get rid of all their enemies. They'll bring them to the land flowing with, you know, chalav and devash, milk and honey. "Kilo ele bikir becha, kiam kshe oref ata, penachel cha badarach." And then he says, "But I'm not going to be in your midst." So whatever this malach was, so it's clearly not Hashem, and God would not be in the camp, so to speak. And one way to think of that is just the way that the Machane ultimately was set up, where you had the Machane Shechina in the center of the camp of Israel, where the Mishkan was, which really represented the idea that, you know, God's Shechina, God's presence, was with the people, which was what the people desired. But, you know, then it says the people heard, so they mourned and they took off their, whatever, this ornament that they had. And basically, Hashem says, they're a stiff-necked people. If I go in their midst, we'll finish them off. And it's not, wouldn't be good, basically, if God was in their midst. And they removed their adornment. And then it ends off with this, Umoshe yikach et ha'ohel v'natzalo michutz la'machaneh. So the Rav actually has another a beautiful essay, which is hopefully it'll appear on the screen. So it's in here, Adam Be'olamo, which is like a collection of the Rav's essays. Some of them appear in other things, and he has an essay on talking about Slicha u'Mechila v'Luchot HaBrit, where he talks about the Chet HaEgel, kind of talks about the stages, because the problem here is, well, Moshe doesn't seem to say anything in response to this, and then just says he takes the tent and he pitches it outside the camp, harchik min ha'machaneh, and he calls it the Ohel Moed, the place of meeting, the tent of meeting, and v'hayakol mevakesh Hashem yetzei al Ohel Moed asher michutz la'machaneh, and anyone who was seeking Hashem will go out to the Ohel Moed, which was outside of the camp. So people would go outside. They would watch him. They would look after him until he would go into the tent. And the So and the people would so Moshe would go, and that's where God would speak with him. And the people would see at Amud Le'anan, Omed Petach Ha'Ohel, V'kam Kol Am, V'shachavu Ish Petach Ha'Ohel. And then it says, V'diber Hashem, Moshe, El Moshe Panim El Panim, God spoke with Moshe Panim El Panim, face to face, Kasher Dibar Ish El Re'ehu, as man speaks with his friend, V'shachavu Malchana Mesharato Yahushua Ben Nun Nar, Lo Yemish Betoch Ha'Ohel. And he would return to the camp, and his assistant Yahushua wouldn't leave the tent. And then it shifts into, sort of our psukim, which is where Moshe says, you say to bring these people out, but basically petitions God to sort of return into the camp. The question is, what are the psukim before? Like it seems disconnected. And whereas Moshe says not, and whereas they have to remove their ish et yo, his adornment. The next thing we're hearing about, Moshe moves his tent. The people are all watching. God speaks with Moshe face to face. Like, what just happened here? Like, what's the flow of the story? What does one thing have to do with the next? Anyone want to offer a thought or a suggestion? Yeah, SD, I'm trying to like make sure I could see all the people. All right, go ahead.
I've always thought that this was an explanation of like what the new situation was. Like now that Hashem was not in their midst exactly how he would have been before, this was the new setup with Moshe outside the camp with the Ohel Moed. And then like it's kind of interjecting in the middle of the story. This is what the new situation was going forward. And then it continues with the story.
Yeah, and that was also like I would say that was my perspective as well. It just seemed to, be describing, and I kind of like just moved on. It's just sort of, it bothered me a little bit, but I was sort of like I don't know, all these psukim are confusing, so like I don't know what to do with that. So the Rav, so he says that, so he points out, what Moshe requests afterwards were sort of this reinstating of the relationship between Hashem and Bnei Israel. We don't say that there is really this seeking of, kapara, slicha, mechila, but we don't say that that one is able to achieve those things without teshuva. So like, where is the teshuva? So the Rav says that really these psukim are in many ways are representing the people's teshuva, because it's showing their tremendous desire, their yearning to come close to Hashem again, and that itself is the tshuva. So, in other words, without that, without the people really, the idea that, he pitches his tent outside the camp, and kol mevakesh Hashem, anyone who seeks God. So, in other words, you have to be seeking God in order to be able to achieve kapara. So I thought that was a very beautiful, beautiful idea that I, wanted to share before we, jump into the Gemara and jump into the Rambam. But I think it frames the whole conversation between Moshe and Hashem in a different way. Moshe's not just pleading for like a magical cure to, to the situation that the Jewish people are in. There was teshuva. The people were yearning to be close with God again, and that itself was the teshuva. And then now Moshe can start talking to Hashem and say, "Oh, hodieni na terachecha." In other words, let me know your ways and be able to really seek mechila and see a path forward. So I thought that was really a beautiful idea from the Rav. So let's take a look at the yeah. So and then of course Moshe asks Hashem. So hodieni. So please let me know your ways, Vedacha, so I can know you. The And if I find favor in your eyes and see that you're Kiamcha Agoyaza, that this nation are your people, right? That there's this connection, they're your people. And then what do you call it? So then by Yomar Hashem Moshe, Gamat the Varza, Sher Dibarta Esa. So I will do that. Because you found favor in my eyes, and I know you by name. And we won't try to get into what that means at the moment. And then now he says, show me your glory. And then Hashem says, Ani avir kol tuvi al panecha, v'karati b'shem Hashem l'panecha, v'chanuti et asher acho, and v'chanti et asher arachim. And we'll see this in the Mora a little bit later, but the Rambam says that this is not an answer to Hareini Na'at Kivodecha. This is really an answer to the first question of Hodieni Na'at Derechecha. In other words, make your ways known to me. But we'll get into that. But basically, there's these two questions. One is Hodieni Na'at Derechecha, make your ways known to me. And then there's another question, which we'll discuss when we see the Rambam, of Hareini Na'at Kivodecha, show me your glory. And we'll talk about what's the difference between those two questions, what precisely is going on here. But we'll get to it, step by step. All right. So we'll take a look at the Gemara now. Okay, so very much what the Rav is saying in the footnote is the way that we should, I guess, the perspective that we should have on these psukim is from this Gemara in Brachot. And if you recall, he says that there are going to be two positions in the Gemara, and the Rambam goes like one of them, and seemingly the Rav goes like the other one. In other words, he kind of hints at it, but doesn't say it outright. If you notice the way the Rav says it, so he just begins with Rabbi Meir says he didn't receive a reply, and Rabbi Yochanan he disagrees, and then Maimonides he adopts the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan in the name of Rabbi Yossi that he was enlightened, but the Rav doesn't yet share with us what his opinion is, and I think in many ways he's setting things up for what he's going to be discussing further on in the essay. Okay, so we'll take a look at the Gemara. So this is in Brachos Zion Amud Aleph, and I always have trouble reading Gemara when it's not on the Tzurat Hadaf, but I will do my best. So the Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Yossi. So Rabbi Yochanan said in the name of Rabbi Yossi. So there were three things that Moshe requested from the Holy One, blessed is he. v'natanlo, and he gave it to him. Bikesh shetishra shchina al Yisrael. So one, he requested that God's shchina, God's presence, should rest upon Israel. V'natanlo, and he gave it to him. Shene'emar, halo belechtecha imanu. So he quotes the psukim that, you know, when you, you know, go with us, the, I know the English translation on the side doesn't actually line up with the Hebrew, so I'll just make it go away. Okay. Then bike shelo tishra shchina al umot ha'olam. So the second question is, or the second request is a little more shocking. This is that he requested that God not allow his presence to rest upon the nations of the world. And he gave it to him. They put the wrong nekudot here. Okay. So, and you'll be distinguished, I and your people. Okay. Bikesh lehodio derachav shel hakadosh baruch hu v'natan lo. So, and he also requested to make known to him the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he gave it to him. Shembar hodieni na derechacha. As it says, make known to me your ways. Amar lefanav. So he said before him, Ribono shel olam, mipnei ma yesh tzadik v'tov lo. So, master of the universe, why is there a tzadik v'tov lo? V'yesh tzadik v'ralo. There's a righteous one good for him, and there's a righteous one that it's bad. V'yesh rasha v'tovlo, v'yesh rasha v'ralo. There's a wicked one that is good for him, his life is good, and there's a wicked one who things are not good. Amarlo, Moshe, tzadik v'tovlo, tzadik ben tzadik. Moshe, here's how it works. A tzadik, where his life is good, that's a tzaddik ben tzaddik. Tzaddik v'ralo, tzaddik ben rasha. So a tzaddik who it's bad for him, that's a tzaddik who's the son of a rasha, of a wicked one. Rasha v'tovlo, rasha ben tzaddik. So a rasha whose life is good, that's a rasha who's the son of a tzaddik. And a rasha v'ralo, rasha ben rasha. And who's the wicked one where it's all bad for him? That's a Russia ben Russia. Amar Mar, Tzadik v'Tovlo, Tzadik ben Tzadik, Tzadik v'Ralo, Tzadik ben Russia. Ini. So now the Gemara is bothered by this approach. So it finds it very hard to believe. Right? It says, really? The way that it's determined is for a tzaddik v'tovlo, it's only if they're a tzaddik ben tzaddik, if they're the righteous one who's a child of a righteous person, and if a tzaddik v'ralo, tzaddik ben rasha, right? And a righteous one where it's bad for him, that means that he must be the child of a wicked person. How could that be? Ma'aktiv poked avon avot al banim. Uktiv uvanim lo yimutu al avot. Right? So, it's Veraminan Kraya Hadade, right? So we know that there's two psukim that contradict each other. So one says that God visits the sins of the fathers on the children, and another verse says that the children will not die on account of their fathers, right? And so these contradict each other. Mishaninan Lokasha, and the answer is there's no difficulty. Ha, kish ochzin ma'aseh avoseihem bideihem. So, in words, when their a child who suffers on account of the sins of their father, that's if they continue in the way of their father. Ha, kish ein ochzin ma'aseh avoseihem bideihem. And, the other case, where they don't die on account of their father is when they don't hold on to the deeds of their fathers. Elahachi So, but no, this is what Hashem must have said to Moshe. Tzadik v'tovlo, tzadik gamor. So a tzadik v'tovlo, so righteous one, that's a good life. That's a tzadik gamor, right? They're 100% righteous, which is sort of introducing a new idea. Before, where there's a tzadik or you're not a tzadik. Now there's a tzadik gamor. And then tzadik v'ralo, tzadik she'eno gamor. And if a tzadik, things are not great, things are bad, so that's a tzaddik who's not complete in his tzidkus. V'rasha v'tovlo, rasha sheinu gamor, rasha v'ralo, rasha gamor. And a rasha where it was good life means they're not completely a rasha. And rasha v'ralo, rasha gamor. And a wicked person who's a bad life, they're completely wicked. Okay? So that's... So basically the Gemara is saying that Moshe had three requests. All three were granted. And the third request is this idea of he wants to know the Darchei Hashem. And it's revealed to him how, basically how the world works, right? Why some people have a good life, why other people, don't have a good life. But of course, the Gemara finds the answer to be unsatisfying. Then they revamp it a little bit and say, "No, means a complete tzaddik or a complete rasha." So it revamps it a little bit, and was the answer to that's how Hashem granted Moshe's request. Okay. Any thoughts, comments, questions?
That's not a very satisfying answer.
No, it's not. Yeah. I mean, it's a very, it doesn't seem to, it's kind of like saying you're waiting for this big mystery, this big puzzle to be uncovered. And then the big reveal, and that's it, that's all you've got. Like that's the big secret. So it's difficult. This is a Gemara I've thought a lot about. I don't feel like I have yet the ultimate explanation of what is going on here. What is this? Why is that a satisfying answer? And you see, even the Gemara starts with one answer and then immediately says, that answer is no good, right? Or that approach can't work. What do you mean? Tzaddik ben tzaddik, it has to do with a person's own deeds, how they are. And then it introduces this idea of a tzaddik gamor or a rasha gamor, and what precisely is that. So it's not easy to understand.
I have a question. So do you think the idea of tzaddik ben rasha, tzaddik other, means that if a person is a son of a rasha but he's a tzaddik, he then that would make him not a complete tzaddik? You understand what I'm asking? Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that what the Gemara is implying?
The Gemara seems to approach it the question is, does the Gemara mean to say, when it says, Ela hachi ka amar le, whereas this is what he said to him, so is it saying that what was meant by tzaddik ben tzaddik was that's the tzaddik gamor, because there's kind of a completion in their tzidkus? Possibly. I'm not totally sure. I think that there's a tension here in terms of, when a person is a tzaddik or a rasha. So on one end, we just look at the individual as a distinct individual on their own merits and demerits. Who are they? But simultaneously, a person is is a product of their environment. There's a way in which, a person whose, family are tzaddikim and they're raised that way. There's a way in which their tzidkus is perhaps more complete, and they might have a better chance of being a tzaddik gamor. And a Russia who's, person who's made bad decisions, but their family, are tzaddikim. So perhaps it's not complete. Maybe that's the Russia that's eino gamor. Maybe there's a connection between the two. I'm not totally sure. I'll be very honest. I'm not yet at the point where I feel like I understand this Gemara completely. There's a lot more here that I don't understand than I do.
The Gemara, it does make the connection to me, the connection makes perfect sense, but it doesn't make sense why the Gemara brings that as the example of the son. I mean, you just say that it's a, tzaddik shelo gamor. Why does the Gemara go through the parent?
Right. I mean, I think it's possible to bring out that idea of that what, in other words, that what's behind a tzaddik gamor and what's behind, a Rasha gamor or a tzaddik she'eno gamor is very often, the family. It's more than them. In other words,
yes,
it's
yeah,
more than
sense.
Just their, the person standing on their own as an individual. In many ways, I think that might be part of what the answer, what the Gemara, what is the Gemara saying that Hashem is communicating to Moshe? Because it seems so trivial and it doesn't seem like anything terribly deep. But I think that there part of it might be this idea that Hashem is communicating to Moshe that there's a complex network at play when it comes to determining how a person's life goes. So in some ways, the way that the Gemara presents it sounds like this simplistic formula. But I think, I would argue that it's more, it almost presents more complexity than, and kind of telling Moshe that this is a complex area. There's a tremendous complexity to what determines a person's level and what their life is going to be like. You have to look at their parents. You have to look at other mm-hmm. factors. I mean, I'm kind of being, I guess, stretching the Gemara perhaps beyond what it's saying to make mm-hmm. it make sense to me. So that's why I'm not totally confident that, that I'm, saying the Gemara and that's really what the Gemara is saying. There's a lot of temptation here to kind of like read things into the Gemara that I'd like to say. But simultaneously, I sort of, humble myself before the Gemara and still feel somewhat unsure as to, what's going on here.
Can I make a few comments here?
Yeah,
I'm curious
of course.
What you think. On the one hand, it's kind of like taking some responsibility away from an individual, and it's saying that, not everything, we like to think, and I think that it's easy to fall into like a narrow perspective that we have so much control over what's going on. We make our own decisions in our life, but it's saying that there's much more at play here, and it's taking some responsibility, but also some reward away from how a person's life turns out and decisions that they make. And it's also just saying that you said, there's a bigger picture here that people aren't always aware of. And it's almost hard to even remember that there are other factors at play when, as life evolves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, excellent. I like what you're saying.
Can
yeah,
you
very much so.
also, Can you also read into it that the Gemara is the answer is that it's not the person's fault if it's bad for him or not, exactly in the case of a tzaddik,
well,
a tzaddik v'rasha.
Right. Well, there it seems. I think that's what bothers the Gemara is that it's saying, you know, we know that there's this. You know, the Gemara immediately says, "How can you say that?" You know, Ini. Whereas we know that there's a stira, there's a contradiction between two psukim. And basically, the Gemara is saying like this is the famous, you know, like this is a well known issue, you know, where you have one pasuk which seems to indicate that children suffer for their parents, another one seems to say the opposite, that they don't. And we know that the answer to that is that it all has to do with whether they're ochazin maaseh avotayim bideihem or not. You know, do they continue in the path of their parents or do they not continue in the path of their parents? So the Gemara is immediately bothered by the first approach because it seems to take that away. It seems to say, you know, sort of like willy-nilly, like, you know, like the person is being punished for their parent, you know, even if they're a tzaddik, you know, like, how can that be? And that's what, you know, the sort of the second approach is more, you know, well, there's a tzaddik gamor, there's a rasha gamor, but I don't know to what degree we have to completely forget about the first approach, because there is a certain degree to which, you know, we don't get to decide what family, you know, we're born into. And that decision of, you know, whether we hold fast to, you know, the path of our parents or not, to some degree is not, we all have Bechira, but, you know, some people are dealt a much more difficult hand than others. Lauren?
Yeah, Is these two opinions of what Hashem is answering Moshe? Is it either that one is a tzaddik ben tzaddik and tzaddik v'ra'lo, or then the other one is like, no, it's tzaddik gamor? Like, that's what I'm kind of confused with the structure of
yeah.
the...
Yeah, so, yeah, I don't think it's the Gemara is not presenting it as a machlokas, but as a revamping of the first answer. In other words, because the way that the answer was presented at first presents us with an impossibility, right? It presents us with this possibility that you have somebody being punished for their parents' misdeeds. So that's why it rewords it to say, no, what we mean is Rasha Gamor or Tzadik Gamor. But I don't, in other words, when the Gemara does, you know, a Elahachika Marle, in other words, this is what he really meant to say. I don't think it completely, it's a complete, you know, pushing away of the first answer, but there's something to the first answer which is preserved, but is being modified somewhat, right? Meaning it's not denying that there's influence by parents, but still you have two situations. You have an individual who holds fast to what their parents do, and you have another person who sets their own course, right? So I think that's, you know, where it's not a machlokas, but it's the Gemara is refining the answer because the first one is not satisfactory. In other words, it opens up too many problems.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
And again, I don't know how clear I'm being because I have a lot of difficulty understanding this Gemara, and you know, a lot of it for me is in the realm of possibility. You know, maybe this is a good explanation. But what we do see, you know, remembering the Rav's footnote, is that Rav Yochanan, in the name of Rav Yossi, so he maintains that when Moshe asked, you know, Hodzieni na derechecha, make your ways known to me, that he was answered, that he got an answer, right? Now, perhaps the Gemara's reporting of the answer is not exactly what Hashem communicated to Moshe, but I think it's trying to capture something of what Moshe must have been taught by Hashem. So, but then we get to Upliga the Rabbi Meir. So now the Gemara says, so now this is, you know, in opposition or an argument with Rabbi Meir. Okay, so what does Rabbi Meir say? Damar Rabbi Meir, shtayim natnu lo v'achat lo natnu lo. So the two were granted and one was not. So meaning the first two, that Hashem's, you know, Shechina presence should rest with the Jewish people. The second one is that it should not rest with the other Umot HaOlam, the other nations of the world. And that itself could be a topic for a whole class. What's that all about? If you have a copy of the Ein Ayah, Rav Kook's commentary on the Agadot in the Gemara, so he offers some interesting possibilities if you want to look into that. But I am not going to get into that today. So Rabbi Meir says, "Shtaim not nula v'achad lo not nula." Shne Amar b'chanoti et asher achon. So it says, I will be gracious to the one that I will be gracious to. Afal pi she'eino hagun, even though they're not hagun, that they're not fit, they're not meritorious. So v'richam tiyat asher arachem, and I will be merciful or kind to the who I'm merciful to. Afal pi she'eino hagun, even though they might not be deserving, they might not deserve it. Okay, and then the Gemara that continues is really, it's connected, but it's really a separate Gemara. So we'll you know put the period there, even though there's a comma. So Rabbi Meir has this other opinion, and he quotes the pasuk, Lamed Gimel Yud Tet. So, if you recall, let me just see. Sorry. Okay. All right. Okay. So Moshe had asked Hodieni Na Drachacha, and then he's getting his response over here. So it would seem when the pasuk says, "God to the Bar Zasher Dibarta Esa, He Matzatachin Veinai Veidacha B'Shem." Vayomar harini nat kivodecha, and he says, "Show me your glory." Now the Gemara here doesn't talk about that pasuk. Right? Doesn't address what that pasuk means, which is "Show me your glory." It says, "Vayomar ani avir kol tuvi al panecha v'karati v'shem Hashem l'panecha v'chanoti et asher achon v'richamti et asher arachem." So here it says, "I will cause all of my goodness to pass before you, and I will call out in the name of Hashem before you, v'chanoti et asher achon. I'll be gracious to him, gracious, v'richamti et asher arachem." And then it says, "Vayomer lo tuchal lirot et panai, ki lo yirani ha'adam v'chai." It says, "You will not be able to see my face, because no one can see my face and live." Okay. And then the next psukim is sort of where Hashem sets up the situation, how he's going to reveal his midot to Moshe. And that's, you know, kind of the rest. And then in the next parak where God reveals the midot of Rachamim. So, you know, that's how it proceeds. But Rabbi Meir focuses on this pasuk, on pasuk Yud Tet. So to a certain degree, he ignores the gamat adavar hazeh asher dibarta aseh, "I'll do what you ask, because you found favor in my eyes." He says, "I will cause all of my goodness to pass before your face." I'll be gracious to whom I'm gracious, and I'll have mercy to whom I will have mercy. I'll put it out to you. So what do you think Rabbi Meir is saying here? Hey, don't y'all all jump in at once.
Maybe he's saying that like Hashem is just answering him like I choose to like with Tzadik B'ra'ah L'Rosh HaTovo, Hashem's saying like I choose who to be kind to, merciful to, rachem to. So it's kind of like I choose it and it's not for you to know.
Meaning, whereas Hashem is saying, there's no way for you to know. Meaning, I'll be, but what's interesting, the Gemara says, Afal pi she'eino hagun, right? In other words, even if they're not deserving of it, in other words, they're not fit to, so it's an interesting way of reading the pasuk where it says, I'll be gracious to who I'm gracious, and I'll be merciful to who I'm merciful. And both of them, the Gemara says, and or Rabbi Meir is saying, "Afal pi she'eino hagun." Even if they're not fit, right?
What is called to be?
What is called to be? So the Gemara doesn't explain. I like the Rambam's approach in the Mora. Where he ties the kol tuvi back to the story of Ma'aseh Bereishit, where Hashem says over and over again, "Vayara Elokim ki tov." So for the Rambam, kol tuvi is a reference to the idea of Hashem showing Moshe sort of the totality of his creation, all the interconnectedness and all the principles whereby God's universe functions. So that's the Rambam's interpretation. I mean, there are other interpretations, but I think it's a pretty good shot. The idea of connecting Kol Tuvi to the Tov of Ma'aseh Bereishit. So I think that's a the interpretation I like a lot.
Oh, so you can say that the reason that there's a people that wherever doesn't deserve to be benefited is just for the sake of existence, maybe.
What do you mean? Say that again.
So there's a so it sounds like it's not necessarily based on for each individual that they earn Hashem's benefit, but it could be just for the sake of just the creation, the existence.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Yeah.
I mean that there's some larger purpose
Yeah.
that might have nothing to do with that specific individual. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, no, that's very nice. Yeah, very, that's a very nice approach. Right, so I like what Naomi is saying, that perhaps what Rabbi Meir is saying is that when Hashem says "Vachanoti et asher achon, rihamti et asher achem," Hashem's saying that the perspective that you would need to understand why I have mercy on some individuals and not others relates to this idea of kol tuvi. So it's something that you could only understand if you had this kind of absolute perspective, because it could have nothing to do with that individual's merits or demerits. There might be some larger plan, larger purpose, kol tuvi, that would be understood, that would be the perspective to be able to understand that, right? Yeah, any other thoughts?
I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's kind of very basic. What is the basis of like the basis of the question? Like, do we have an assumption that we should be able to understand all of this? I mean, maybe we just actually can't understand certain things about how Sfar Vaonish works, and it's just completely out. Like, we want to understand it, but like, on what basis are we asking with the assumption that we should be able to figure it out?
Right. So, I mean, so it seems that the Gemara is hitting on that issue where Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yochanan, the name of Rabbi Yossi, seems to maintain that there is a perspective, you know, that that at least Moshe could have. Because it's not saying that we could have this perspective, but it's saying Moshe. In other words, that there was a perspective that Moshe was granted that he could make sense of all this. You know, that, you know, he could perceive Kol Tuvi. And Rabbi Meir seems to be, you know, saying the other side, you know, that no, there's a intrinsic problem, you know, where really only God can know. And in many ways that echoes, you know, the Rambam in Hilchot, you know, Teshuvah, that, you know, only Ein Shokhlin Ela Bekel Deot Bilvad, only the God of knowledge, of deot, of all, you know, knowings, of all minds, can possibly have the perspective to know, to weigh one's merit and demerit. You know, of course, you know, in the Rambam in Hilchot Teshuvah, there he's, the Rambam is still maintaining that what the way that a person is judged, you know, is based on, you know, their merits, their demerits, and that should have some impact on how their life, you know, their schar and their onesh. But we don't have that perspective. It's not a perspective. We're not able to, we have no idea how to set our scales to be able to say, you know, put the, you know, put this in here and put the, you know, and weigh it and put it together. But, you know, the, but very much here, you know, I think it's quite possible to say that that's really the debate between Rabbi Yochanan, the name of Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Meir. In other words, but it's not a question of whether, but it's important to remember, the question is not whether we could understand, is the question about Moshe Rabbeinu. In other words, was Moshe granted the perspective that he would be able to make sense, that he would be able to sort of get that big picture, to be able, you know, Kol Tuvi, and be able to understand why things function the way that they do. And you know, I think in many ways, when the Gemara says, you know, Tzadik v'ra'lo, and you know, in many ways it's almost a stand-in for sort of, you know, the knotty issues of when you look out at the world and you try to make sense of why things are working the way that they are. You know, like, then, you know, did Moshe reach a point at which he was able to make sense of that? Did he have that perspective? And according to Rabbi Meir, even Moshe wasn't able to have that perspective. And God said, you know, I will be merciful to who I'm merciful. I'll be gracious to whom I'm gracious. And even if they're not hagun, even if they don't deserve it, they don't merit it, because you're not able to understand. So I'll just to kind of summarize, and we're definitely not going to get to the Mora today, but just going to go back to the note. So, and recall what the Rav does. So he starts off by saying, "See brachot, devenay." Right? So it's usually a good idea to see something when the Rav tells you to do it. So according to Rabbi Meir, Moses did not receive a reply to his request to comprehend the problem of suffering in the world. The righteous man who is in adversity and the wicked man who prospers. So yes and no. Did Rebbe Meir, he didn't receive a, he wasn't granted his request, but he did get a reply, right? So, you know, the reply was, you know, basically you have no, you know, it's, I will be gracious to who I'm gracious. I'll be, you know, merciful to who I'm merciful. And even if they don't, even if they're not, don't merit it, they're not fit. So Rabbi Yochanan, name of Rabbi Yossi, disagrees. So it's interesting. Do you notice what the Rav did here? Anybody notice the Rav kind of makes an interesting switch here. So he, instead of, so who's first in the Gemara? The Gemara starts with Rabbi Yochanan, the name of Rabbi Yossi, right? And he's not, Rabbi Yochanan in the name of Rabbi Yossi is not presented as the one who disagrees. He's presented as the Gemara's first answer. Or is where Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yossi says that he was granted his request. And then it brings up Rabbi Meir, who says that Moshe wasn't granted that one. And then he says, well, you know, that Rabbi Yochanan, you know, he disagrees. And the Rambam takes up the view of Rabbi Yochanan in the name of Rabbi Yossi, right? You know, that he gave, you know, that he enlightened him regarding the governance of the totality of existence. And this is the, you know, the point of, you know, all my goodness, kol tuvi, that alludes to the display to him of all existing things, that is, his grasp of the existence of all my world with a true and firmly established understanding. So I'll just say for now, it's interesting that the Rav flips it. In many ways, it makes it sound like Rabbi Meir is the position that's the more acceptable or accepted position. And Rabbi Yochanan disagrees. And the Rambam, you know, takes up the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan in the name of Rabbi Yossi. So it's interesting, like the way that the Rav presents it. Whereas when I first read this footnote, I said it seemed like Rabbi Meir is like sort of like the more standard answer. And then like the Rambam is kind of going with the, you know, the Bar Plugto, with the one who's got a different opinion. So I'll just point that out. And I think the Rav is doing that for a reason. But it's interesting to note, you know, that in the footnote, the Rav is already setting things up in a way for which will further his, I would say, which will further what the Rav is going to try to present and say in the rest of the essay. All right. Any questions? I'm going to wrap up, but just want to make sure if there are any questions, we have time for them. Okay. All right. Okay. So I'm going to, I'm talking with Ben about, you know, getting the Shiurim up, the recordings up, so they'll be more easily accessed, and hopefully we can get them up sooner. So that people who are not here will be able to hear the shiurim. All right. Have a Shabbat Shalom, everyone. Pleasure learning with you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Shabbat Shalom. Okay.